Welcome to Inside Education on 103.2 Dublin City FM. I'm Barry Hennessy. Sean Delaney is off this week. Coming up on this week's programme.
There is a value, both economically and socially, for the continuation of funding and support for the arts, humanities, social sciences.
And you thought it was all about science. We hear the case for continuing to support research and study in the humanities. If you'd like to get in touch with the programme, you can email us at insideeducation@dublincityfm.ie. You can also check out our website, insideed.com, where you'll find our entire programme archive, as well as useful links and references for the topics we've covered. You can also download our weekly podcast from iTunes. First this week, we begin with our usual look at news from the world of education. And it's as much a memory of all our school days as class tours and nativity plays. But now it seems that the days of spending hours on homework at the kitchen table may be numbered. The Irish Primary Principals Network this week said there's little evidence to suggest that homework as we currently know it has any real benefit. In a submission to the Joint Oireachtas Committee on Curricular Reform, the IPPN said that effective differentiated teaching in the classroom far outweighs the valuable tuition time lost on homework correction. The primary principal's body also pointed to the stress homework causes in families and the difficulty many parents have in helping their children to do it. I've been speaking to the IPPN's PRO, Larry Fleming, and I first asked him if these concerns over homework were a Damascene conversion or something they'd felt for some time.
It's based really, Barry, on feedback from a large number of principals throughout the country and indeed parents. We've built up links with the National Parents Council over the recent years, particularly since Anya Lynch became Chief Executive Officer, and we worked together on a number of projects. And we have been in discussions with the officials at the National Parents Council, but we've also been taking feedback from our own members. And what we're really saying is, I think the perception is out there that we've called for the abolition of homework. That's not the case. What we really call for is that the role of homework in our system needs research and analysis, and we're looking for an in-depth study of how this can be achieved.
Isn't one of the key reasons for giving homework the fact that it facilitates ongoing positive communication between the teacher and the parents? I mean, if kids at primary weren't doing homework, wouldn't much of the effective communication be lost?
We accept that homework, yes, is an excellent tool for communication between school and home, and also offers parents an opportunity to actually monitor the content of the curriculum. That's accepted, and that's without doubt. What we're basically saying is the role of homework when a child is spending 2 to 3 hours per night either transcribing or indeed doing countless number of maths, many of which are done by the one method anyway, we would question the value of that. And we also would question the fact that there's some, shall we say, quality time being lost. It's accepted. We feel that there should be no homework at infant level, with the exception of some, shall we say, shared reading. Certainly reading would be the only area that we would consider that would require attention. And at senior level, there's certainly, and I think many schools would have a policy where no child should spend, at senior level, should spend certainly more than an hour at homework. And that's a position we've held since our inception.
You say that inexperienced teachers frequently over-prescribe homework to kids. I mean, isn't that something that should be addressed through, say, school planning? I mean, isn't the development of homework plans part and parcel of what should be going on in schools?
Absolutely, and that's the way it's been done at school level. Many principals have expressed concern to us that while there are plans set up at school level whereby homework is set at a level, first of all at a class appropriate level, but also at an individual appropriate level. You see, the reality is homework, unintentionally, but it's perhaps by human nature, tends to veer on to suit, shall we say, the more able person in the class. Consequently, the below average student will suffer and will end up spending a lot more time at the homework than would the more able student. And that's something that's unfortunate, but that's just the reality. So what we feel is that effective teaching in the classroom, which differentiates between children's learning style and their learning abilities, would be far more important than the quantity of homework given.
Are you saying that teachers aren't actually engaging in differentiation when it comes to homework?
What teachers have been, the reality is different abilities that children have creates the problem. Teachers are, in fact, differentiation is the buzzword now, and many, many teachers are involved in differentiation in the classroom. That's really what the new curriculum is all about. It's child-centred. But when you block homework given across a class, really it really suits the more able child, and that's something that no teacher can basically cater for unless they give individual blocks of homework to individual children, and that is both time consuming. It certainly will take up a lot of the teacher's time in correction and does not meet the needs of the child. Yeah. What we're really saying is the question of homework needs more research, more analysis. We're not saying get rid of homework. We're not saying that the bulk of teachers throughout the country are giving too much homework. What we're really saying is that homework, by its very nature, does in fact suit the more able child, and it tends to impinge on the time of the less able child.
Larry Fleming from the Irish Primary Principals Network there. Well, one other news story for you in brief now, and this week is the 5th annual Maths Week, organised by the CalMast Centre at Waterford IT. Maths Week aims to promote awareness, appreciation and understanding of mathematics for all. As you'd expect, there's a diverse array of events taking place across the country. One that caught my eye here in Dublin tomorrow, Monday evening, is a lecture being given at the RDS by Oxford Professor Marcus de Sautoy. In his talk entitled The Secret Mathematicians, Professor de Sautoy will document the often unseen artistic side of maths that has inspired centuries of composers, painters, writers and choreographers. If you'd like to hear more, then why not go along to the RDS tomorrow Monday evening at 7 p.m. They do recommend advance booking on 01-240-7289.
It's The Difference, 103.2. This is Dublin City FM.
And you're tuned to Inside Education here on 103.2 FM with Barry Hennessy. A reminder once again, if you have any comments on what you're hearing tonight, you can email us at insideeducation@dublincityfm.ie. Well, we've got very used over the past couple of years to hearing government ministers and talking heads extolling the virtues of lucrative research in the science and biomedical area. When Cycle 5 of the government's PRTLI funding programme was announced in July, 90% of the available funds went to projects in the broad field of science. So you'd be forgiven for thinking that those working in the humanities would as well be packing up their tents and hitching a ride home. Well, now the Irish Council for Research in the Humanities and Social Sciences has set out its own template for continued support for a range of disciplines that still attract high numbers of students, both from home and abroad. Playing to Our Strengths is the ambitious title of the report that was launched by the IRCHSS and the Higher Education Authority last month. Dipti Pandya is the director of the Irish Council for Research in the Humanities and Social Sciences, and she came into studio to discuss the report's findings and the broader potential of humanities in these straitened times. First then, that idea of the humanities as one of Ireland's strengths.
Yes, I mean, the family was a very good example of that. You know, one of the major outcomes of the family forum last year, the global forum, was, you know, the recognising the cultural strengths of Ireland. You know, we keep talking about tourism, creative industries, creative, you know, what's Ireland well known for? It's our literature, our cultural endeavours. So it's very much based on that, building on those strengths. The report itself is very much, we would like to see it as a starting point for further discussion in this area. And I suppose the main message that we're trying to get across is that there is a value, both economically and socially, for the continuation of funding and support for the arts, humanities, social sciences, and that it shouldn't just be seen as a luxury, you know, area that really we don't need to support.
Do you think our political leaders believe that?
Well, I suppose, I mean, in terms of the fact that the council exists, we are the only funder for this area and we were set up, it's our 10th anniversary this year. So I would be positive in that way. You know, our founder, the minister at the time was Micheál Martin. So we have been supported, you know, in that way. But obviously our funding is completely very different to our science, counterparts. So the political side, yeah, I mean, I suppose there has been a focus, and but that's been globally, really, on the science, technology and engineering areas, and understandably so. But I suppose now we're trying to get the message across that this is an area that should be supported and not seen just as a luxury, as I said. I'm not trying to say that we shouldn't support science, technology, innovation. That is a very important area. But that this area could be seen as valuable as well.
It's interesting, isn't it, when you look at the numbers, say, of US students who come to Ireland.
Yes.
It's a very important, you know, it's a very important source of a lot of the foreign students who come here. And the overwhelming majority of them, it seems to me, come to pursue studies in the humanities area. I mean, the government is out there now, along with the universities, trying to encourage people from other fields, you know, the engineering field, the maths field and all of that. When you talk about playing to our strengths, Are you maybe suggesting that the government needs to acknowledge that internationally this is where we are perceived to have the strength?
Yes, I mean, I think we have. I suppose we want to get the message across that we do have areas of world class strength in these areas. I mean, that, you know, that we these exist, and that, yeah, as you said, international students are coming here to study these areas. These are some of the areas that are giving us the metrics for our rankings on the, you know, different university ranking websites and you know, listings. And so this is an area that we should support and continue to support, but recognise, I think that's the main, I mean, as I said, what is Ireland famous for? It's literature, culture, cinema, you know, there's an arts in general.
And arguably our sort of stepping stone position as regards
yes.
the rest of Europe is hugely an attraction to people who would be looking at doing humanities research here. The fact
yes.
that if you wanted to come to Ireland from Connecticut and do a thesis in French, you're only 90 minutes from Paris at the
yes.
end of the day.
Yes, it's very central. And then obviously the education system here is very highly thought of internationally.
This report is not only about research. It in fact it looks at teaching and learning of the humanities pretty much at all levels. Looking, for example, at the situation, say in primary and in post-primary, you're anxious, are you not, to try to develop the linkages between the research that's going on, the new discoveries that are going on in third level, and practitioners and indeed students in the primary and second level classroom?
Yes, we're very anxious to do that because it's an area that I feel personally that there's a slight gap. You know, that again, yeah, that there's a lot of work going on in third level, and it's we're very, as I said, world class in some of the academic areas in the arts, humanities, social sciences. But we're trying to bring this research to this primary and post-primary audience. So, in fact, we've just launched a scheme which is called our Research Development Initiative, and we have one of the strands is called the Knowledge Exchange Activities, and the purpose of that is to bring some of the research that we would have funded and other people would have funded, but in this area, to a non-academic and a non, I suppose, theoretical, so more a user stakeholder audience. So one example are the schools. So we'll be looking for projects to bring this research. I mean, you gave the example earlier of the census, but something like that to bring maybe historical research, historical archives, how we, you know, because I think for us to understand where what we're doing now and, you know, things like the economic crisis, we need to understand how we got here.
Just going back, I suppose, to the main body of the report.
Yes.
And it talks about the study and research in the humanities, obviously enough. You get a feeling reading through the report that there is a concern right the way through it that there may be some form of a disconnect between those who are engaging in work in the humanities and the wider world. I mean, this seems to be a kind of a concern, of a preoccupation that runs through the report.
Yeah, I mean, I think, I mean, some disciplines lend themselves very naturally to working with the outside world. But I mean, we also fund obviously the social sciences as well, and so that includes business and law, and those have much more links with the outside world. But yeah, I suppose we're trying to demonstrate. I think one of our difficulties is that the lobby for the arts, humanities, social sciences probably has been poorer than the science and technology side. So we need to get the message across that yes, we can work with the outside world. I mean, one of the schemes that we funded last year was working co-funding. So we funded 60% of funding and the rest had to be from an industrial partner. So one of the projects, for example, is in digital humanities and it's with Intel. They've put in the funding there. Another project is looking at the importance of carers. So Care Alliance Ireland have co-funded it. We have another project on acquired brain injury. So a clinical psychologist has funded it with psychology in Trinity. So it's we're getting more into working with industry. But I mean, obviously, there's an importance for fundamental research as well. But we're trying to show that there can be potential for applied research and more translational research. So that's bringing it to a different audience.
You also suggest that there's a need to bring people from a wider range of backgrounds outside of formal academia into the lecture theatre, into the university. Give me an idea, I suppose, of the rationale behind that.
Yeah, I mean, I suppose that it's the opposite to the placement programme, which a number of our universities and institutes of technology already have. And they run very successfully this sort of internship programme. And obviously there's been more of that lately where people, you know, trying to enhance the employability of our graduates. So we feel that bringing people with real life experience into our lecture theatres and bringing that to bear to the learners other students, that would, again, you know, there's a the main drive behind this is enhancing the employability of our graduates and ensuring that they can hit the workplace running and, you know, given the current climate. And that's why I think this report is so timely.
Yeah. I mean, on that, for example, one of the points that the report makes, and I mean, there's an acknowledgement there, that although the numbers of people who undertake courses in the broader humanities area in this country is very, very high, that they do end up following very divergent and often very varied career paths. And,
yes.
there's a concern that sometimes the courses that they follow, the formal courses that they follow, don't adequately prepare them for those career paths.
Yes, and we sort of, one of the suggestions or one of the proposals is that more of the programmes, and this is not actually just in the humanities and social science, but obviously in the science and technology area as well, that there should be more cross-collaboration, that there should be, for example, enterprise modules undertaken by engineers, and then the same should be true. You know, so basically a liberal arts education should be fostered across. I mean, this is more of an American system, which we haven't really developed here in Ireland.
But you see, if I wanted to be devil's advocate here, Dipti, I would put it to you like this. I would go back to the word university, and I would suggest that since time immemorial, the whole idea of going to university was that you'd have your formal side, but then you'd have your social side, and you'd have your interaction, and you'd meet a broad cross-section of people. I mean, is there not a danger that actually we end up asking the formal courses to do too much, or in essence to do what students should arguably be doing when they step outside the lecture theatre anyway?
Yeah, I mean, I suppose the next stage of this will be to look at the implementation of this. I mean, these are suggestions, as I said, it's a kind of starting point for this. But I mean, I would say personally my experience has been that, you know, people stick within their disciplines, staff stick within their disciplines, and it's, you know, it's there is more of a divide there than there probably should be. I mean, and some people are developing and learning things through osmosis, I suppose, but this is a way of ensuring that it's part of the curriculum. Now, it could be that it's in the first year curriculum, and as you know, that this more general broad education is for the first year, and then people obviously specialise. Mm. So the actual sort of mechanics of it have to be worked out. But I suppose the premise is that this divide, and people should get an more rounded education, and again, as I said, come back to.
But I suppose what I'm getting at, for example, is if we take the quintessential art student who might be doing Greek and Roman civilization, philosophy and politics, for example, and the concern is there, well, what does this person know about entrepreneurship? I mean, isn't that what they're kind of supposed to learn in the clubs and societies, organising events and all the rest of it? I mean, you know, isn't that kind of what they should be doing in terms of getting the broad education? Are we not trying to nanny them a little bit too much to bring all of these things into formal structures?
I mean, my worry would be that people maybe need a bit of that. You know, that are they developing that through those membership of society. I mean, how many people, never looked into that, but you know, how many people join societies, how many people are getting into a wider spectrum. The people, for example, that often we fund, you know, we get them at postgraduate stage, so their PhD level. But we see people's applications, and people are very specialised at that stage, and I suppose that's the nature of some of the education. Now, obviously, some of the universities and the Institute of Technology have tried to broaden their programmes. And I suppose what we're trying to say in the proposal or the report is that more proposals should be developed in this light.
Mm-hmm. In essence, what it seems to me that you're suggesting is that perhaps at undergraduate level that there is a need maybe for a more generalist approach. Is that basically what we're getting at here?
Yes.
That the undergraduate programmes focus at turning out broad, you know, people with a broader educational experience, and then maybe the job of postgraduate is to specialise.
Yeah, I suppose there's a bit of that. I mean, there is generic skills development, and as I said, I mean, you know, in the current climate, I mean, that's the key thing. You know, making people not employable. I don't think anybody, you know, people don't want to graduate, which is what seems to be happening at the moment, unfortunately. And you know, going to work in a shop or in a hotel, you know. We saw the other day about the Shelbourne Hotel, you know, a number of graduates applying for these jobs, and the times are very difficult at the moment. So I suppose to make people more have generic skills, make them employable, more employable than they already are, and give them a more rounded education.
I'm talking to Dipti Pandya, who's the director of the Irish Research Council for the Humanities and Social Sciences, and we're discussing the new report that has come out, which is called Playing to Our Strengths, which is a report that was commissioned by Mary Hanafin when she was Minister for Education. And here we are, two ministers on. So it's been a long process, the drafting of this report. Give me an idea, I suppose, of the process you went to in terms of trying to look at the future for the humanities.
Yes, I mean, it was a very, as you said, a long process, and it's interesting because obviously when we started this process, which would have been the summer of 2008, you know, we were in a completely different landscape, funding-wise, country-wise. You know, this was during the boom.
Yes.
You know, the discussion was about how do we increase funding for this area, and it's completely changed. So in that two-year period, everything completely changed for, you know, everybody, I suppose. And it's the process was very much consultative. We had a steering group, we had an international steering group, and we had a committee here that was established that, with support from the Irish Research Council and from the HEA. And the committee was chaired by Professor Maurice Brick, so the founder of the council, and from a professor of history in UCD. And the steering group was chaired by Michael Kelly, who was the former chairman of the Higher Education Authority. Mm-hmm. So we ran a number of consultative forums. We ran a stakeholder workshop, and we invited feedback. And you can see that in the report, and it's available on our website with details of who, you know, participated. But it was very much a full consultative process, and I think our community very much welcomed it, as in the arts, humanities, social sciences, because it was a relatively, you know, it was a first for this type of activity.
Mm. You call for an end to the situation where people who are, you know, now we're looking at was a staff here, really, who are engaged in research of the humanities, can go for years without being obliged to teach. I was a little bit surprised at the notion that there would be so many people who would be in the humanities area. One imagines that there are people in the science area, the medical area, perhaps, who are research professors and all the rest of it. But how common is it in the humanities for somebody to be solely devoting their time to research whilst holding down a full-time academic post?
That's not very common in terms of the full-time academic post. I suppose the type of person that we're talking about there are people who are full-time researchers, so they're funded by different research funds. There are no full-time research positions per se.
Yeah.
But if there's funding from different bodies like ourselves, then they may be receiving that funding. But we want to make sure that all of our lecturing staff and our academic staff are research active, and that the items that are being taught, or things that are being, courses that are being developed and taught, are by research active staff.
Whenever we hear from people in the UK, we're constantly being told about the administrative load in particular there. And how do people in Ireland find the workload, for example, in their jobs? Have you any information as to how easy people are finding it to undertake research whilst balancing the requirements of a teaching?
Yeah, no, I think it's very difficult. It's becoming more and more difficult now because people are expected to, as you said, undertake more administrative workloads. You know, they're asked to do a lot more for their universities or the Institute of Technology than they would have done before. I mean, my previous roles were very much trying to encourage research, for example, in the Institute of Technology, where they have a heavy teaching load, staff do, and it's very difficult for them to undertake research. Mm. Our feedback is very... But, I mean, some of the schemes that we fund, we try and fund research, the allocation of research assistance or allocation of teaching replacements, so to enable people to get the time. But those types of schemes in the universities and the institutes are reducing. You know, there was funding, for example, for sabbaticals, mm-hmm. career breaks. That's all, you know, gone with the current embargo.
Sure. But again, you know, the critical importance, I suppose, of getting these active researchers into the lecture theatre so that, you know, the benefits of the work in progress is being shared with students right the way along, right down to
first years as well, yes. And I mean, I think that's happening, and we see the very good lecturers, you know, for some reason are able to do everything. And, you know, that's the type of people that we have on our books, particularly.
What about the recession, in the sense of attracting more people interested in staying on to do postgraduate work.
Yes.
One imagines that as the labour market has dried up, the demand for research postgraduate places has increased, or has it?
Yes, in the last 2 years, so since 2008, our numbers have increased by 50%. Unfortunately, the flip side of that is due to budgetary constraints, our numbers of awards have decreased. So we have a success rate this year of 2010 of about 15%, so 1.5%. Which is very, very, you know, we've gone down from about 30% 2 years ago. So it's very, very competitive.
Yeah. I mean, for example, you know, certainly when I was back in university, you know, you always assumed that at the very, very least you might get your fees waived if
yes.
you were a postgraduate researcher. You know, does that hold now, or is the funding situation so bad that postgrads are even being expected to pay fees?
Well, it depends on, I mean, if you get, if you're successful in getting our funding, then you would get a stipend of 16,000 and your fees waived. But and then I think some of the institutions themselves have their own internal funding. But there's less funding than there used to be. And the difficulty is that obviously they are made to justify their different resources, overheads. So I would say there's probably less waiving of fees than there would have been before.
Mm-hmm. Is there an implementation plan now for this report?
Yeah, I mean, in our report, if we have sort of steps that we'd like to take place. And as I said, the first stage of this is very much meeting more of the stakeholders, getting the message across, but also then looking at things like the development of more rounded education. I mean, we've already, just by releasing the report last week, we've already had some great interest from different, you know, like university leaders, I would say. So it's to, you know, one of the things we're going to do is our 10th anniversary event, which is on the 26th of November. And there we're looking at having a panel discussion about the future of the arts, humanities, social sciences and its value to Ireland and globally.
Well, certainly on this programme over the last year or so, we've had various reports, various stories about, I suppose, the importance of research in the sciences, medical area, etc. So if nothing else, this, I think, has served to reposition, to rebalance the debate a little, and hopefully it'll in time give rise to, I suppose, an awareness in the public mind that there are, when it comes to how one values research, there are more, there's definitely more than one side to the story.
Yes, thank you. And thank you, Barry, for inviting me. Actually,
you're very kind.
Very much welcome the opportunity to speak more about this.
And that was Dipti Pandya there. She's the director of the Irish Research Council for the Humanities and Social Sciences. And that report, which is called Playing to Our Strengths, can be accessed on the Higher Education Authority's website, which is hea.ie. Well, that's all from Inside Education for this week. Don't forget our website is still there for you. It's called insideed.com, and you can access this programme and all of our programmes, and you can also catch our weekly podcast on iTunes. Until next time, this is Barry Hennessy saying thank you for tuning our way, and goodbye.